It's 6 hours Universal Time. Stay tuned for Daybreak Africa coming up after these latest world news headlines.
I'm Steve Norman reporting. U.S. Secretary of State John Kerry says the Obama administration will increase the number of refugees allowed to enter the United States.
Last year, I think we were at 70,000. We are now going to go up to 85,000 with at least, and I underscore the at least, it is not a ceiling, it's a floor of 10,000 over the next year from Syria specifically, even as we also receive more refugees from other areas.
Speaking Sunday in Berlin, Mr. Kerry called the U.S. decision a step in keeping with America's best tradition, and he says it is a land of second chances and a beacon of hope. Earlier on Sunday, Austria said 11,000 migrants crossed into the country from Hungary. In just the last 24 hours, authorities are also saying another 7,000 migrants, many of them fleeing Syria's civil war, were expected Sunday at the main crossing east of Vienna. Iran's President Hassan Rouhani says most Iranians backed the nuclear deal with six world powers, including the United States, even if some hardliners denounce it. Under the deal, Iran would scale back its uranium enrichment to keep it from building a nuclear bomb and agrees to vigorous inspections of nuclear facilities. In exchange, the U.S. and its allies will ease the sanctions that have affected the Iranian economy. West African negotiators announced a plan on Sunday to end the crisis in Burkina Faso with a military coup overthrew the traditional civilian government there last week. Proposal would restore civilian authority but offer amnesty to the coup leaders. Protests against the coup turned violent, killing at least 10 and injuring more than 100. This is VOA News. Pope Francis is on a 10-day tour of Cuba and the United States. Sunday, he celebrated Mass in Havana's Revolutionary Square and then met with former President Fidel Castro and his brother Raul, the current president. Father Brian Lucas, General Secretary of the Australian Bishops' Conference, speaks with VOA on the significance of the Pope's meeting with the Castros.
I think what we're seeing here is a move towards reconciliation. There was obviously many, many years of extraordinary hostility, not only between, for example, the Cuban regime and the United States of America, but enormous tensions within Cuba itself as the dictatorship had its impact on the people. What Pope Francis is doing is speaking to the people of Cuba and inviting them to a reconciliation among the different factions within the community. And, of course, we're familiar now with the role that he played in bringing about a greater rapprochement between Cuba and the United States.
The Pope's U.S. schedule includes a private meeting with President Obama later this week, speaking to a joint meeting of Congress, and later on addressing the United Nations General Assembly in New York. Greek Prime Minister-elect Alexis Tsipras claimed victory on Sunday in national elections, saying he will quickly form a coalition government to implement austerity measures demanded by European creditors in exchange for billions of dollars in bailout aid. Tsipras rose to power earlier this year on a campaign platform of opposing spending cuts and tax increases that were demanded by Greece's European creditors. But after a series of heated negotiations with European envoys, he capitulated to most of those demands, arguing that Greece faced certain bankruptcy and a ruinous exit from the joint economy of the 19-nation Eurozone if it did not accede to those demands. Last month, Tsipras resigned his post as prime minister, as much of the country was upset about his capitulation. With his resignation, Tsipras called for Sunday's election. Houthi rebels in Yemen have freed at least five foreign hostages kidnapped earlier this year, including two Americans. All were freed on Sunday following negotiations between the rebels and the government of Oman. Details on those talks and why the hostages were kidnapped in the first place are unclear. Yemeni tribesmen frequently have kidnapped Western hostages to try to win concessions for the government. Nearly all of them eventually were freed unharmed. Iranian-backed Houthi rebels seized Yemen's capital, Sana'a, last year, forcing the internationally recognized government to flee to Saudi Arabia. You can get more news at our website. That's voanews.com.
That's the latest world news from VOA.
morning, Africa. Welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm James Bate in Washington. Today's Monday, September 21st, and here are some of the stories we are covering. West African mediators propose a November election in Burkina Faso as demonstrators in Washington call for the unconditional departure of the military junta.
The main purpose is to, without discussion, ask the Obama's administration to use the tools and the power that it has to get rid of these criminals in Burkina Faso.
Paul Sankara is the junior brother of the late Burkina Faso leader Thomas Sankara. White Zimbabweans reflect on what it means to be a white Zimbabwean. Despite huge gains in the fight against malaria, experts say more needs to be done in Africa. And President Salva Kiir will not attend this month's meeting at the United Nations.
President Salva Kiir is not going to the United Nations General Assembly meeting because he had already delegated his Vice President James Wanyika to go and attend the General Assembly meeting as scheduled.
Michael Makui is South Sudan's information minister. Meanwhile, the rebels say President Kiir's absence is an indication that peace is not a priority to him. U.S. lawmakers are excited yet anxious about Pope Francis' historic speech to the Congress this week. Those stories, plus Mark Oldman's Sports and our listener of the day, are coming up on Daybreak Africa. Washington-based Burkina Faso residents and friends of Burkina Faso on Sunday held a demonstration in front of the White House to say no to the military takeover in their country and yes to the scheduled October election. Meanwhile, Economic Community of West African States mediators led by Chairman and Senegalese President Macky Sall late Sunday proposed a new and more inclusive election in November. The proposal would restore civilian authority but offer amnesty to the coup leaders. ECOWAS leaders are expected to meet tomorrow, Tuesday, in Abuja to discuss the proposal. Paul Sankara, younger brother of the late President Thomas Sankara, says that demonstrators at the White House on Sunday called on President Barack Obama to demand the reinstatement of the transitional government led by Michel Kafando.
The main purpose is to, without discussion, ask the Obama's administration to use the tools and the power that it has to get rid of these criminals in Burkina Faso. The coup d'etat that occurred on September 16th this year is something unacceptable. 3 weeks away from the elections, and then the armed wing of Blaise Compaoré, 30 years guy, took a power and killed more than 25 people in 3 days.
Paul, an ECOWAS delegation is in Ouagadougou to negotiate with the military junta. What do you think will be satisfactory to you? What do you think the ECOWAS should do?
No, first of all, they have to listen different parties. That has been done. But so far, what I have received through the media, the conditions that has been proposed by the junta officer, Jindiri. There is no discussion about that. Can negotiate about that. There's no amnesty for what? Somebody has to respond about the 25 and more killings. Who's going to be responsible about that? First thing. Second, is not under power of the military squad to intervene in the political arena about the elections. The second point that he trying to explain the junta is that some of the former regime members has put out of the competition for the elections. It's not just Burkina law, it's African Union law. Those who participated to stop the process of democracy cannot anymore participate on the elections.
One of the main concerns of the say former president Blaise Compaoré's party is the decision to not allow them to take part in the October election. Some would say that's not democratic, let them take part.
Okay, let's be clear. It's not the party itself that has been forbidden to take part of the October elections. It's some members of the party. The Supreme Court, transitional Supreme Court, didn't say no to the party itself. But the name that they propose as candidates has been denied based on African Union law. If you have done something before against the democratic process, against the constitutions, what they have done a year ago, you cannot take part of the elections.
What are you hearing from the civil society on the ground in Ouagadougou? Are they planning more demonstrations or what?
Oh, yeah. Until death, they are decided to not let anybody take the assets of the sacrifice that has been done last year, October 2014. So, yeah, they completely decided more and more. And it's not just the civil society. You have the trade unions that calling the workers to not go to work. We are in a strike until Gilbert Gagné and his junta step down.
Paul Sankara is the junior brother of the late Burkina Faso leader Thomas Sankara. He was speaking with me from Washington, D.C. South Sudan President Salva Kiir will not be attending a meeting at the United Nations later this month, called by Secretary General Ban Ki-moon to strengthen the ongoing peace process. Information Minister Michael McQuay says President Kiir had already designated his Vice President James Mwani Iga to represent the South Sudan government. In addition, McQuay says the invitation was given to President Kiir on a short notice. He said while President Kiir considers the UN meeting very serious, the situation in South Sudan is more serious.
Salva Kiir is not going to the United Nations General Assembly meeting because he had already delegated his Vice President James Waniga to go and attend the General Assembly meeting as scheduled. But last Monday, the President received an invitation letter from the Secretary General of the UN inviting President Salva Kiir to attend side meetings. Of course, the President found it difficult after that. Meanwhile, he had already, all the necessary arrangements were made and the American government was informed, given the list of those who are going there and so forth, for the president now to say, Mr. Vice President, now I'm invited to go and attend the side meetings. You're going to the UN General Assembly meeting is canceled and I'm the one who will be going there. Of course, that is difficult. That is impossible. Not that only, but the fact that the President, His Excellency the President, was given the invitation on such a short notice definitely will not allow other commitments to happen.
Does that mean that President Salva Kiir does not take the meeting at the United Nations very seriously?
The President takes it very seriously, but nevertheless, because of the seriousness of the situation on the ground, more than what is happening in the UN General Assembly meeting, he decided to authorize his Vice President to attend the two meetings.
Can I take it to mean that President Salva Kiir doesn't want to meet with his former Vice President, Riek Machar, who is also coming to the United Nations?
How do we say that he does not want to meet? He has been meeting with him in so many times in Addis Ababa, and he will be ready to meet him anywhere else. The question is the wrong timing in which these two meetings have been scheduled.
There was this meeting in Ethiopia. How is it going in terms of the implementation?
The workshop was called by the IGAD. Of course, the workshop should have started actually on the 5th. And continued up to the 7th, but unfortunately the IGAD failed to call the meeting in time. So at present we are behind schedule, and this is because the IGAD failed to meet their timing. And yesterday, the delegation that went to the workshop came back yesterday to inform us that the agreement on the implementation of the permanent ceasefire was signed by the government delegation and the former detainees delegation, and the rebels rejected the signing of the agreement. So the ball is now in the court of the IGAD and the rebels.
Was there any reason why the rebels did not sign?
Rebels did not sign for reasons which are not known to us, but known to them. So the best thing is to ask the rebels as to why did they not sign.
Michael McQuay is South Sudan's information minister. He was speaking with me from the capital, Juba. South Sudan rebels say President Salva Kiir's decision to skip a United Nations-sponsored meeting later this month at the United Nations in New York is an indication Mr. Kiir does not see peace as a priority, particularly since the invitation was extended to the two principals in the conflict. On the other hand, the rebels say they have always been committed to peace, as evident by their being the first to sign the recent agreement. Ambassador Ezekiel Lo Gatkuov, the Secretary for Foreign Affairs of the Sudan People's Liberation Army, the SPLA, in opposition, says rebel leader Riek Machar is expected to arrive in New York this Thursday.
My leader, Dr. Riek Machar, will be attending in his capacity as the chairman and commander-in-chief of the SPLM-SPLA opposition And also, as a first vice president designate, we will be arriving in New York on the 24th. Definitely, the mission is for peace, as organized by the Secretary General. We are for the implementation of the agreement, and that's why we are actually traveling, to show our commitment to the UN that we are for peace.
Does it bother your organization or does it bother your leader, the fact that President Salva Kiir is not coming?
No, it does not actually bother us at all. It is actually a clear indication that he is not seeing peace as a priority. But we would wish him to be there together because the two principals are invited by the Secretary General of the UN to be there. So the world will judge who is serious about peace and who is not serious about peace. But on behalf of my organization and on behalf of my leader, Dr. Machar, we are for peace. If you recall, we are the first to sign the agreement on the 17th of August. And President Kiir refused to sign until 9 days later, after a lot of pressure from the world community.
The implementation workshop in Addis Ababa that took place this past week, I'm told by Mr. McQuay that the government signed the agreement, but you did not sign.
Well, we had, it is actually about the secure arrangement in Juba and other capitals. And if you recall in the agreement, it is clearly stated that Juba will be demilitarized. So demilitarization means you will take the army away from the capital city. But if you look at it in the proposed draft that is asked to be signed by the parties, it is actually militarizing Juba. It is not demilitarizing Juba because basically, for example, it says that the barracks in Juba will be protected by 5,000 soldiers. This is not demilitarization. And it says that 3,000 integrated police will also be there. This is already 8,000. Another 1,000 presidential guard. This is 9,000. Another 260 ceremonial guards. This is already close to 10,000. And then the national security also it was also said that they will be in civilian uniforms, but they did not actually say the figure. And it is also silent on how to share those numbers. So basically, you are militarizing Juba and you are not demilitarizing Juba.
Ambassador Ezekiel Gatkuov is the Secretary for Foreign Affairs of the SPLA in opposition. He was speaking with me from Addis Ababa, Ethiopia. Today is Monday, September 21st, and you're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. I'm James Butte in Washington. Please send your comments and opinions to daybreakafrica@voanews.com. Daybreak Africa time is coming up at 18 minutes past the hour. Some white Zimbabweans say they love their country, even if they have, over the years, been mistreated by the ruling ZANU-PF party, especially during the country's controversial land reform program that began in 2000. Gibbs Dube of VOA Zimbabwe Service reports from Washington.
Former white commercial farmer Alex Kusen is affectionately known locally as Chuma, a common surname in the Matabeleland region. Others call him Makozindenda, literally meaning someone with welling saliva. Kusen lost his farm to invaders despite his deep roots in the Mkuza community. He says he has moved on and is currently operating some businesses in Zimbabwe's second largest city, Bulawayo. He says the love for the local Ndebele language has healed some of his wounds.
If you can speak the language, learn it, then you understand the people. And, you know, the Zimbabwean people are probably the most friendly people in the world, other than probably Australians. You know, everyone you see somebody, everyone greets you. If you go to Europe and you greet people, they think you want something or you're mad.
He dismisses assertions that some whites in Zimbabwe, mostly those who were affected by land reforms, are isolating themselves.
There might be still one or two misguided elements, but you're going to find them everywhere in the world. You know, you're with me. There's still neo-Nazis in Germany. We integrate with everyone. You can't isolate yourself in a country like this, but you wouldn't want to isolate yourself because most of the guys, well, we all feel the temperature's the same in business.
His colleague, Ben Frith of the Southern African Development Community Tribunal, however, is still a bitter man following violent farm invasions in his area, which left one of his close relatives dead. Frith says he is still seeking redress for alleged injustices committed on white commercial farmers.
What I was asking the United States to do, that the United Nations Committee for the Elimination of All Forms of Racial Discrimination should have a complaint put to it regarding the breaking of that United Nations convention, which our president signed in 1991.
He believes that there was no need for the government to use force when it introduced its land reforms, which have been widely criticized by countries like the United States, Britain, Canada, and Australia. Some within the community argue that much needs to be done to transform Zimbabwe into a rainbow nation, as was promised by the government in 1980 when the country attained independence from British rule. Reporting for Studio 7 in Washington, D.C., this is Kip Stube.
The world has made incredible gains against malaria, but as VOA's Carol Pearson reports, experts say much more work needs to be done, especially in Africa, where 80% of the infections and deaths occur.
15 countries, mainly in sub-Saharan Africa, account for 80% of the world's malaria cases and 78% of deaths, according to the World Health Organization. Dr. Tom Frieden, director of the U.S. Centers for Disease Control and Prevention, says in some African hospitals, 60% of the patients suffer from malaria. He recalled that one West African hospital he visited recently had to perform 5,000 blood transfusions to treat seriously ill malaria patients.
And as I walked into the hospital, I walked in with a father who was carrying his 4-year-old son who was dying from malaria. So it's still a deadly problem in Africa. We need to persist in our activities, expand them, and also figure out new ways to stop this terrible disease.
Frieden says more children should sleep under bed nets. Patients need to receive better medical treatment. And in addition, new treatments are needed.
We're seeing real problems with drug resistance. Use of the pills that have combinations of what are called ACTs or artemisinin combination treatments in place should reduce the likelihood that the drugs that people take cause resistance in the malaria parasite. But we're seeing pesticide resistance to some of the pesticides in the bed net.
In West Africa, until very recently, most medical resources went to fight against Ebola, and malaria patients largely went untreated. Mateusz Pluchinski from the Centers for Disease Control spoke via Skype.
Whenever you have more malaria cases going untreated, what that results is first of all, one result is more malaria deaths.
The CDC found that untreated malaria surged in Guinea during the Ebola epidemic and caused far more deaths than the Ebola virus did. Pluchinski says the findings likely hold true for Sierra Leone and Liberia as well. Although a huge increase in funding has led to unprecedented treatment, prevention efforts, and research, Dr. Frieden says still more needs to be done.
We have to continue to find breakthroughs on malaria, to look for a vaccine or a way to control mosquitoes more effectively, because malaria remains a horrible challenge.
Most researchers say malaria is a preventable and treatable disease. The challenge is getting to that point. Carol Pearson, VOA News, Atlanta.
Pope Francis will become the first leader of the Roman Catholic Church to address a joint meeting of Congress on September 24th. As VOA's congressional correspondent Cindy Sain reports, U.S. lawmakers are both eagerly awaiting and bracing for comments from the man called the Pope of the Poor, who is known to speak his mind and to challenge the rich and the powerful.
At the U.S. Capitol, anticipation has reached a fever pitch over Pope Francis' address to a joint meeting of Congress. And no one is more excited than the man who invited him, devout Catholic and House Speaker John Boehner. In a special video, Boehner said lawmakers are very interested in what the pontiff has to say.
His outreach to the poor, the fact that, you know, he thinks people ought to be more religious. He's got some other positions that, you know, are a bit more controversial, but it's the Pope.
But some analysts say those controversial positions could end up making Mr. Boehner regret his invitation. Pope Francis has spoken out strongly about the dangers to our planet posed by economic injustice and climate change. And the Vatican has welcomed the Iran nuclear deal. The Pope's positions on these issues are closer to Democratic President Barack Obama's views than those held by leading Republicans. Analyst Reverend Thomas Reese explains.
And when he comes to Congress, if he says you should welcome the immigrants and refugees, you should care for the poor, you should protect the environment, these are issues that when he if he says them, the Democrats are going to jump up and applaud. What are the Republicans going to do? Sit there on their hands? If they get up and applaud, then the Tea Party people are going to be very upset with them.
I mean, one Republican, Representative Paul Gosar, says he will boycott the speech because of the Pope's focus on what he calls the fool's errand of climate change. On the Democratic side, Representative Luis Gutierrez contrasted the compassion of Pope Francis for migrants with the harsh anti-immigrant rhetoric of leading Republican presidential candidate Donald Trump.
In many ways, Pope Francis represents the anti-Trump, the antidote to his venom.
But on other issues, such as gay marriage and abortion, the pontiff may say things many Democrats do not like. Reese says he hopes Pope Francis will have this message for Congress.
I think hopefully he will also tell them, get over your partisan politics. You know, it's time to get together, work together to solve the problems of this nation and of the world. And at that point, all the American people will get up and applaud.
It may take more than even a visit by Pope Francis to get members of Congress to stop fighting and work together. Cindy Sain, VOA News, Capitol Hill.
Time now for Daybreak Africa Sports. Here is Mark Owoma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Good Monday morning to you, Mark.
Good morning, Jane. In our Daybreak Africa Sports news, we begin at the All Africa Games in Brazzaville, Republic of Congo. In men's football, Senegal pipped Burkina Faso by a solitary goal to clinch the gold medal. It's also Burkina Faso's first appearance in the finals of the men's football. In the women's game, Ghana won 1-0 to avenge their loss to the defending champions Cameroon 4 years ago in Maputo, Mozambique. In table tennis, hosts Republic of Congo had something to cheer on the final day of competition on Saturday after they bagged 2 bronze medals in the men's and women's contest. Egypt won the women's gold medal while Nigeria bagged the silver medal. In the men's contest, it was the reverse as Nigeria prevailed while Egypt settled for the silver medal. In handball, Egypt pipped Angola 25-23 to win the men's event, while the Republic of Congo edged Nigeria 32-29 to claim the bronze medal. In the women's contest, Angola beat Cameroon 33-29 to clinch the gold medal, as Senegal pipped Nigeria 25-24 to claim the bronze medal. In basketball, Angola beat Egypt 83-73 to win the men's game, as Nigeria edged Mali 57-55 to bag the bronze medal. In the women's contest, Mali emerged champions, Nigeria was silver medalist, and Angola claimed the bronze medal. Turning to football, world football's second most powerful man, FIFA Secretary General Jerome Valcke, is suspended, FIFA revealed in Zurich, Switzerland on Friday. This follows allegations against Valcke of inappropriate conduct regarding ticket sales for the 2014 FIFA World Cup. A FIFA Ethics Committee is to investigate the matter. And that's it for Daybreak Africa Sports News. I'm Mark Owoma in Johannesburg, South Africa. Back to you, James, in Washington.
Thank you, Mark. Have a good day. And briefly, before we leave you, a summary of Africa news. West African negotiators announced a plan on Sunday to end the crisis in Burkina Faso, where a military coup overthrew the transitional civilian government last week. And that's it for this Monday, September 21st edition of Daybreak Africa. We thank you for starting this week with us. On behalf of the Daybreak Africa crew, I'm James Botti in Washington, saying I wish you to have a very productive week.
Hello, I'm Carol Castiel, host of VOA's Encounter. Join me and two advocates from the world of politics, public policy, or academia, debating critical and controversial issues of our day, bringing depth, perspective, and insight to the world around us. You can listen to Encounter on Saturdays and Sundays. On Saturdays, tune in at 3:30 and 14:30 UTC. And on Sundays at 5:30 and 17:30 UTC. Or subscribe to the Encounter podcast. Just go to our homepage at voanews.com and click on podcasts. Also, we love to hear from you. Send an email to encounter at voanews.com or Connect with us on Facebook at facebook.com/CarolCastielVOA. That's Encounter on VOA Africa.